It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And that mic wasn't, he's still Adam, but he probably had a little more trouble hearing that. We'll get it fixed here. And anyway, good morning, one and all, to the regulars. Thanks for coming back.
Steve.
Depend on you.
Yeah. I was hoping he'd show up because I'd hate to say, you're Stephen Van Wee, and I'm Adam Van Wee.
Yeah, Alan's been practicing voices.
I think it's working now. Yay.
Yeah.
Glad you're back.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been in the studio.
America's favorite soccer dad is back in the studio live today with us. And that doesn't mean he's not being a soccer dad. Already won one game.
Yep, have another one at 12:30. So
yep, showtime worked out to be just about right today, especially given the fact that they're local games. So we can accomplish it all today. And what better day to not have to go out? I'm glad it's him instead of me.
It's just not really yucky. Nice out there. Yeah.
Just yucky. Oh, well. Anyway, where was I? Back to, we're going to talk about financial things. It was one of those weeks, and by that I mean when you put the numbers together on Saturday morning, as we both always do, sometimes it's predictable and it feels exactly right. And other times, like this week, you stare at the numbers and you go back and double check and say, is it possible that the Dow gained 1.8% this week? It felt so bad along the way.
Yep, it sure did. I called it the end caps. We had a really good Monday and a really good Friday.
Bookends, yeah.
And then the in-between was not so good. Yeah. Actually, Monday and Friday were two of the strongest trading days of the year. So that is why you can't react short-term, because if you sold out on Wednesday, you would have missed out on Friday.
Oldest saying in the book, miss the best 7 days a year, you make no money.
Exactly. So that was a really good illustration of why that is true. And the 3 days in the middle were some of the weakest trading days, specifically in the NASDAQ. But that reversed on Friday, especially late in the day. So we'll see which trend takes over.
You sell going into the overnight, but you buy going into the weekend.
Strange, but that's what happened.
Weird week.
So the NASDAQ was the weakest performer, losing 2.1%, while the S&P actually gained 0.8%, and the Dow was up 1.8%. For the year, all three indexes are still positive, although the NASDAQ is just barely hanging on to a gain of 0.2%, and the Dow and the S&P are up between 2 and 3%. The NASDAQ fell just short of correction territory yesterday due to that strong buying at the close. On an intraday basis, though, we did see it down over 10% from its peak. So it'll be interesting to see if this turns into a true correction in the tech sector. It's probably overdue, but it's really not that bad of a thing, because the recent market weakness has really changed the PE ratios. So if you look at the FANG stocks, they were trading at about 40 times, and now they're down to 31 times price to earnings. So that's quite a discount over where it was a little while ago.
Yeah, and if that sounds expensive, it has all to do with the growth rate and earnings and the potential.
It's still a premium over the rest of the market by about 10 times, but it's well below their historical average. And if their last earnings reports were a guide, all five companies in the FANG, F-A-A-N-G, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google, they're still growing at a very rapid pace. I'm not saying it's a definite buying opportunity right now, but they're much more attractive than they were a few months ago on a valuation perspective.
We're not in it. We can see it from here.
Yeah, definitely. Weakness in the stock market wasn't limited to the U.S. either. In the last month, China's down more than 12%. Brazil is down more than 9%. Japan, Switzerland, and South Korea are all down more than 5%. Norway and Singapore were the only two markets I could find that bucked the trend and were up more than 2%.
So one of my heaviest bets, Norway.
Oh, yeah, I'm long Norway of always.
I may be more Norwegian than anything else, but that doesn't make me look at their stock market.
Friday's rally was attributed to a strong jobs report, and I'm sure that helped, but I'm not sure that was actually the cause, because the initial reaction on Friday morning was a drop.
Exactly.
We were down pretty substantially Friday morning.
Yep.
In fact, I got an email from a client who was getting a little worried because it had been the fourth day in a row of selling. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got read it and got around to replying, and the market was up, and I told him I fixed it for him. So,
well, talk about full service, huh?
Yeah, it wasn't until later in the day that we saw the gains. So the jobs report was pretty positive. There was some really good news in it. The main jobs that were created over the last month were in leisure and hospitality, which, if you have been paying attention, that is the area that's been hit the hardest through coronavirus. Obviously, people are not going out to restaurants, they're not traveling, they're not staying in hotels. So seeing those jobs come back was actually a really positive sign.
It's only the beginning for them.
Yeah, and there's a long way to go there, too. 455,000 private sector jobs were created in February, and only 110,000 of those were outside of leisure and hospitality. So about three quarters of the total was just in that one sector.
Yeah. There was a lot of weather-related data points, or a lot of more data points, because, well, Texas and most other places, nobody was doing much outside construction.
And in fact, the 110,000 outside of leisure and hospitality was the weakest result since last May.
Mm-hmm.
So the boom in leisure and hospitality really covered up some poor numbers otherwise. But I think, like you said, a lot of that was weather related. There are still about 23 million workers who are unemployed, working part time because of economic conditions, or have left the labor force but still want a job. At the rate of job creation in February, which was 379,000 net new jobs, it will take just under 2 years to get back to normal levels of employment. Personally, I think that that will go a little bit faster, because I think as the country reopens, that specifically in the leisure and hospitality industry, those numbers will – I don't think this report is the best report we will see in the next 12 months for that sector.
Not by any means, I don't think.
Yeah, I think later in this year you're going to see some real big gains in that part of the economy. One thing that has been rising this week is Treasury yields. The U.S. 10-year spiked over 1.6% before falling back under to end Friday at 1.57%. For comparison, we started the year around 0.9%, so that's an increase of almost 75% in just a few months. Compared to many other developed nations, our 10-year yield is now quite high, despite being lower than at almost any time in the last 10 years, outside of the last few months, of course. Germany is currently at negative 0.3, Spain is at 0.4, Japan is at 0.097. So our treasuries look really attractive relative to many other countries right now. One area that we're seeing this effect is in mortgages. The 30-year fix kind of rocketed up in the last month from under 2.9% to over 3.2%, but, and this one is for you, Howard and Angela, it's still a real bargain to borrow money for 30 years at 3.2%. So that is part of why the housing market has been so good lately.
Yeah, in fact, they were talking as we were coming out here listening to the radio about the supply, the inventory.
There's nothing.
It's still dismal.
There is nothing out there. And the stuff that I think I heard them say, that the stuff on the market that's lagging is just overpriced or not updated. So buyers are still a little bit discriminate, but there just isn't enough inventory to be completely discriminate.
You know, you wonder, you know, anybody's thinking of selling, this would be a really good time to do it, but then
you just can't
go
anywhere.
No.
Yeah.
And they were also talking about how the rents are skyrocketing.
No doubt about it.
Because there's so much demand that just can't be filled. So I guess the lesson there is stay put and grin and bear it and enjoy your gains.
Yeah.
What can you say? All right. Well, after the break, we will get on to some other topics of interest, and maybe you'll learn something. So stay put. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we, again, as always, have a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. And you can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Most likely, you will get the man himself. This week, I'm talking about fiscal responsibility, a term that inside the fence that was recently erected around the Capitol has not been heard in some time. And as most of you probably know, over the last 24, 36, whatever hours, the debate has been on about the $1.9 trillion so-called COVID relief bill, which has little to do with COVID relief, probably isn't needed at all, and yet is going to sail through, and we're going to add another $1.9 trillion That's the bad news. The good news is it could take them 4 or 5 years to spend it all. And there's still a trillion unspent from the last one. Now, if that sounds like fiscal responsibility to anybody out there, I'd be happy to debate it. But that's not really my point. The trivia question is, over the past 100 years, what currency, and it's not the U.S. dollar, I'm spotting you one already, what currency has done the best job of maintaining its purchasing power over the last 100 years? And it's not easy.
Nope, it was a tough one. I didn't get it.
Yeah, we played Stump the Band, and the band was stumped. All right, you want to finish up anything? I want to mention one thing. Parts of the market are looking really, really nicely undervalued, and some of those are good dividend things, like utilities, for instance, seem very attractive right now. So you dividend people who've been kind of shut out of all the fun, I know because I lean that way, some things are starting to look a little better for you, so something to think about. The other one that seems to be nicely undervalued right now is healthcare. So all in all, I'd say two things are happening. There's some good buy-in points coming up, and there's a lot of inflation denial. So I'm looking at things like tips saying, yeah, pretty soon. But just generally, I kind of like the whole dividend arena in the market right now. So there's always something you can do if you've got some cash on hand and you're thinking it's sitting around.
I like doing financials right now,
very
too.
Little financials.
They have some upside. Good. Would not touch energy with your money.
Nope. But one thing I really don't understand, clean energy has just plummeted.
Yeah, well, it has. I think it's just a cycle. That and some other sectors have also been hit really hard recently. And a lot of those had run up pretty high in the past 6 months. So they were in favor, now they're out of favor. I think that they will turn around and come back. I still think clean energy will be a good investment going forward. I really think that consumer trends are changing. People, when faced with the choice of if you can get the same product for the same price, one's clean, one's fossil fuel driven, they're generally going to pick the clean energy one at this point.
And so, in fact, that's what I'm going to talk about in just a minute.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. Anyway, my point being, one in particular, gold is in complete denial right now.
Gold is down, what was it?
Almost 20%. Yeah. 17.8%, I think, on the year. And gold is an inflation hedge.
Mm-hmm.
It is not consistent. It develops that cognitive dissonance we sometimes get to watch the price of gold keep falling against the hundreds of stories a day that are out there about the looming inflation. And when this $1.9 trillion gets signed, as you can bet it will.
Oh, it's going to happen.
Yeah, because they're going to start doing this stuff real, real fast. And you cannot avoid inflation. Even the modern monetary theory people who are pretty much in denial about the world, even they admit it's very possible this will be an inflationary trend. So if you are a precious metals type and you're interested in them, I would start watching real carefully if I were you. That was easy, huh? All right. This one's called Everybody Knows. What does everybody know? Well, everybody knows that electric vehicles are the wave of the future, right?
I think that there's at least a short-term future, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So GM announced it's going to go all electric by 2035. It will be 40% electric by 2025, which is like day after tomorrow.
In car in industrial production terms, yeah.
Yeah. Is this a good idea?
No, that's a horrible idea, in my opinion.
Is it feasible that GM could survive it if they go along that?
It's feasible because they're always going to get bailed out if things go wrong.
That's very true. But is it a good idea? Back to that one. No.
I don't understand why you have to switch 100%.
No.
It doesn't make any sense.
Are you a shareholder? I'm not.
No. I mean, I'm sure I own some of it through ETF.
Everybody's got exposure if they own enough index funds. But I would not hold that stock on a dare today. No. Not on a dare. And I would be very concerned for anybody who does hold it. I just don't see it. But it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to say why. As of today, General Motors has not made one penny of profit on electric vehicles. Not one penny. Given the environment of manufacturing today, they lose money on every Volt that they sell. And right now, Volt is the only EV, electric vehicle, that they are producing en masse. I don't really think that Elon Musk and Tesla feel very threatened by GM's entry into the market.
Probably not.
Did I put that kindly?
Do you think he's noticed?
I don't know. Well, you know, it's good for him to have a little competition. He looks so much better by comparison.
True.
So let's look at a little history of the electric vehicle market. This was very interesting to me when I got into it. The EV market dates back over 120 years. Who knew?
I didn't.
Not I. There is no one person, nor is there one company, that are actually credited with the early development of the EV. It was done by some individuals here and there in the late 1800s because batteries and electric motors were starting to become available. So it gave some ideas to people like a blacksmith in Vermont and another guy in Iowa. He was a chemist. And they built their own electric vehicles, and you'd see them out on the roads once in a while. In fact, by 1900, about a third of all the vehicles on the road were EVs.
Oh, that's funny. I did not know that.
Isn't that something? I had absolutely no idea. But what was happening right about then was that the internal combustion engine was really taking hold. So they both of them were keeping their market share, and the non-electric traditional internal combustion started to gain some. But then again, electricity was being developed and spread throughout the country, too. So they hung on for quite a while. Now, here's an interesting little factoid. The world's first hybrid vehicle was created in 1899. How about that? By a fella whose first name is Ferdinand. Any idea what the last name is?
I don't know.
Porsche.
Oh, okay.
No coincidence. Absolutely true. We have heard that name ever since. Another guy you may have heard of, his name was Thomas Edison. He loved electric vehicles. Of course, he's kind of an electric guy, noted for that. And one of the partners he took on, because the guy was really, really interested in helping him to develop an affordable EV, was a fellow named Henry Ford. Now, ironically, who destroyed the EV market? Henry Ford. Because of his production line, he was able to sell his combustion car, the Model T, for 37 cents on the dollar compared to the EV. Well, if you want to reach the masses, you just get them something for under 40% of what the other one would cost, and you're probably going to do okay. The other thing that really propelled Ford was when he developed the electric starter for the Model T so that you didn't have that crank in the front, which was the biggest pain that anybody had with those cars back then. So what happened then? Well, crude oil was discovered in West Texas. And the rest, as they say, is history. So pretty soon we had all kinds of roads, and oil was driving the prices down sharply, and people got into cars that went a little faster and a little further, and they started to get used to the freedom that now is synonymous with being Americans. We love our freedom, and we love our gasoline-powered cars. Then, of course, history always being changeable. In the 60s and 70s, we had some little problems with the supply of oil from certain parts of the world that aren't here. And our negotiators at the time in the administration of a peanut farmer really kind of messed it up. So we wound up, I remember this, and a lot of the voices, or a lot of the ears, I guess, out there that are listening right now will remember very well the gas lines of the late 70s, mid to late 70s, and it was a real, real pain. But one thing it did was it re-stimulated the interest in electric vehicles again. So there were people like General Motors, American Motors, of all people. We know more about that being from the Midwest than most people do. They were big in the development of the EV. And another one that most people wouldn't think of, but NASA did a lot of pioneering work because they were already projecting trips to the moon and to Mars, and you can't run into a gas station very often up on the moon and on Mars. So they pioneered a whole bunch of the electric vehicles of the time. Then the GM foray went into the first, not mass-produced, but replicated electric vehicle. And it was based on the Corvair. I'll tell you a little more about that right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question is still out there. Over the past 100 years, what international currency has done the best job of maintaining purchasing power? All right, back to electric vehicles. Backing up just a little bit, when World War II came in, all production of everything, of course, electric, was stopped because every square inch of every factory was put into wartime production. And it wouldn't do very much good for anybody to haul an electric Jeep over to Europe somewhere and try to attack the enemy when you don't have a power charging station. So everything, of course, went to the traditional type then. But when peace broke out, then all of a sudden we were back into domestic production for actual people. And that, again, started to re-stimulate a little bit of interest, although not right away. But we get up to the era now that I guess you'd call the modern era. And there have been quite a lot of – there's been a lot of talk and there have been a lot of attempts and some various pre-production runs. GM's pre-production run was called the EV1. And there were some people, some famous people, who loved them. Tom Hanks had one of the early ones and really liked it, apparently. But the CEO at the time of GM, a guy named Wagoner, he recalled them all, mandatory recall, and crushed them. And that's been a controversial thing ever since. The theory, and by the way, he's now back in business, but he's making charging stations for electric vehicles.
Go figure.
It's a little ironic note for this morning. Anyway, he crushed them all. And one of the theories, and he's never admitted one way or the other, but one of the theories is that he was worried that the electric vehicle would take over too much of GM's business and therefore that they would be competing with themselves. I find that a little lame.
That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, but that's just one theory. Who knows? Hopefully, before he's on his deathbed, he'll tell us. Anyway, when it really started to get popular was when Elon Musk came along. And like every business, every idea, whatever, there are people on the forefront of everything. And I don't know what world he lives in, but it's obviously way ahead of the world that we live in.
Way ahead.
Yeah, he started SpaceX in something like 1988. How the heck could anybody even consider that? But I digress. Anyway, the Tesla came out and it had its ups and downs, you know, about the fires and that kind of thing. And they kept working and working, developing. Had another rocket blow up the other day, but it was a pre-production. They actually learn and they have feedback and they get better at these things. Well, now you see Teslas everywhere. If you haven't learned the Tesla symbol on the car yet, you will very soon because we see them everywhere now. And quite frankly, they're beautiful.
Yeah, they're good-looking cars.
And Adam and I were talking on the break saying, you know, I could see having one of them one day, but if you're a two-car family, I wouldn't make two of them electric.
No.
What if?
I would. Well, just for the simple fact of long trips, it's just so much more convenient to have a
Let's
gas.
Pull off the side on this charging station and get under an umbrella for 20 or 30 minutes while we put a half a tank of fuel in this thing. So, anyway, electricity fuels the business, if you'll excuse the pun, and electricity isn't quite as reliable as we thought it was maybe as much as a month ago. And we saw that in Texas when some really bad weather caused some really serious outages, and it was dangerous, and in fact it was a killer storm because we were unprepared. And that's Texas, where you'd think maybe things would be better than some other places. Well, that's got to be worked on now. The one thing that you can count on is that Elon Musk will not succeed before either A, his batteries that he is working so hard on, has been forever, are perfected to a much higher degree and much cheaper than they are now, bigger and cheaper, or that the electric grid become a lot more available, efficient, and reliable is the word I'm looking for. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning. Has anybody went out to trivia question yet?
No. No one has. You've got a world to choose from except the U.S.
How about the Swiss franc?
How about that? And where would you come up with an idea as silly as that?
Well, I don't know. Just reading.
If that were the case, the reason would probably be because the world trusts them.
Fiscal responsibility.
Yep. And, by the way, you are right. I just have one more little tidbit. The national debt per capita in U.S. dollars of Switzerland is $25,000. The national debt of Americans is, per capita, $81,000 and change before this $1.9 trillion.
Rising quickly.
Yeah.
And we got a whole lot more folks to spread it out on.
A whole lot more. There's only 8 million some in Switzerland. Right. They have had an active program in their government to keep the debt down. And they actually make changes in the way they do business to do that. And because of that, the Swiss franc is the number one currency in the entire world over 100 years for purchasing power. How about that?
Wow.
Nice job.
Good.
All right. And we
all
got
right.
your address. No problem.
Yes.
We'll we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales.
Okay. You guys have a good day.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Leroy.
All right. Bye.
How about that? You know, actions have consequences. Who knew? Anyway, there are two plants, nuclear plants, that are scheduled to open this year in Georgia, one in 2021, actually, one in 2022. But there are no net new plants, and we haven't opened one from the 70s, but we've closed several. There's another one this year. Now, Nuke's been taking a bad rap for a long time since the incident at Three Mile Island. Now, Three Mile Island was a problem that didn't kill anybody. That reactor number one at TMI was encased in, just how they do that kind of thing, encased in concrete. But did you know that reactor number two at Three Mile Island finally shut down in 2019? And it operated flawlessly. They fixed all the controls. But when Hollywood made that movie, the development of nuclear energy was pretty much immediately halted. You couldn't even get a permit. In fact, Adam, you were selling parts of the concrete mix, weren't you, at the time they started those plants?
Well, there was one slated to go in north of Tampa, and it got nixed. But, yeah, I was working with some of the site work guys early on in a former career to get everything set up, and then they pulled the plug on it.
And that's happened all over the country. Now, these two in Georgia, I would have bet money they would open, and I would have bet that money up until the 3rd of November. Now, I'll bet something's going to happen.
It's so disingenuous
because it
is the cleanest, safest form of energy, and the fact that people are afraid of it or don't want it or think it's dirty, it just doesn't even make sense. Do your research.
The problem with renewable energy, wind and sun, is you got 14 seconds from generation to consumption. After that, it dissipates. And you know from physics that energy is neither created nor destroyed, but it only transforms. It can dissipate into heat or light or any number of things. But unless you can figure out how to store it, it's basically useless when it's nighttime or when the windmills are frozen. It just can't happen. The biggest obstacle that Elon Musk faces today in his quest to electrify all of that stuff is the generation of electricity. I will be very interested over the years to watch how that happens. But it's happening.
Yep.
Everybody knows that. And I mean that. It sounds a little cliche-ish, but it's not true. Adam is renewing right after the break a segment he started a couple weeks ago, and we've just been kind of busy to do it. And I don't know if you call it Who Am I, but I do.
Yeah, basically.
It's about somebody that most people know about and how it didn't happen overnight. Marshall, my friend, we have about 30 seconds. So if you will hold on through the break, we'll catch you right afterwards. All right, we've got 30 seconds left. This one, Who Am I, you're going to really like, I think. It's a very unusual look at entrepreneurship,
yeah,
in my humble opinion.
It's a really good one. I like this one.
Yeah, and it was somebody that I wouldn't ever get right. He hasn't taken it far enough to let me know which one it was until after the show last week. But you'll love it. Don't go anywhere. You'll hear it. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Marshall will be with you in just a second, but Adam has a PSA he'd like to do first.
I do. Some really good friends of ours lost their son. It's been over a year now. He had cancer, and so now his mom, both his parents, have started this quest to raise money for St. Jude's, where he was treated. And they are having a golf tournament on May 2nd at Queens Harbor. It's a 12 noon registration, a 1 p.m. start. You can get a foursome for $280, and it all goes to benefit a great cause in St. Jude's. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I've sponsored a hole, and I'll have a foursome out there as well. So I hope some more people will join in. If you have any questions, just email golfingforjoe@gmail.com. So real simple. And she'll get back to you in really quick.
Cool. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen.
How are you?
I remember, Steve, you once said something about you had something to do with the automotive industry.
Yeah, I was a supplier. And the old expression, parts is parts. I made a lot of parts.
Yeah, you're familiar with how dominant those companies were. And then they got these fat cats. And now they are truly dinosaurs. And when you compare a GM to a Tesla, you mentioned about Tesla's cutting edge items. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Tesla solar roofs?
Tesla what?
For your home, are you speaking of?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. I am.
I mean, when you read, yes, it is more expensive.
Yeah.
But when you read how hard they're working on this thing, the combination of that and their battery work, needless to say, they're cars, but I mean, still, the combinations are the thing. I find it interesting, though, they have not done a hybrid car.
That's true, too. But you know, there's a lot more parts involved in that when you think about it. That internal combustion engine, we sold parts that went mostly into the internal combustion engines. And they were, of course, very detailed, but there were so many of them. When you look at the number of cylinders or the number of gaskets or whatever, an electric motor is a pretty simple little device.
It really is. That's one of the benefits of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Elon Musk has done a great job of staying in his lane with his companies. He does one thing. He does it really well. He only has, what, three models out there. And that's, you know, some of those legacy car companies have 50-plus models and different trims. And
sure.
He's kept it simple, and it's a formula that works, and I think he realizes that.
Mm-hmm. He's his own best friend instead of his own worst enemy.
Yeah, maybe that dichotomy of Tesla and General Motors, which, of course, gave all the private owners stock to the union. There should be a book about that combination.
Oh, you can bet it's being done. If you can think about it, somebody's on it. That's the way I look at it.
Most likely.
Then you got
have a great day.
You got the alternatives like fuel cells, too, coming into it. So keep your eyes open, folks. It is the future. Thanks, Marshall. Have a good one. All right, Adam, who am I?
Yeah, so I'm doing a new segment. I got interrupted there because I was on traveling and didn't get to it in the last couple of weeks. But basically, I wanted to talk about what makes this country great. And to me, one of the best things about this country is the ability to move up and improve your economic situation, no matter where you come from and no matter who you are. And this, so I've done one of these already. It started with Bernie Marcus, and he was able to come from relatively very humble beginnings and found Home Depot and become a billionaire. And this is not exactly the same story, but it has some things that are similar.
Yes, for sure. Yep.
So at 40 years old, this man is truly an inspiration for turning his life from a negative to a positive. He was born in the Little Havana area of Miami in 1981 to Cuban immigrants who separated when he was young. He definitely did not have an easy childhood. In fact, he was thrown out of his own house for dealing drugs when he was a teenager. He spent some time with a foster family in Georgia, and he readily admits that he got into a lot of things that he should not have when he was growing up. He did eventually manage to graduate from Miami Coral Park High School before pursuing a career in music. Early in his career, he was able to impress some of the right people with his eagerness and hunger, and that's a quote, and he signed a deal with Luther Campbell's Luke Records as a rapper. Eventually, he shifted more towards pop, which turned out to be a great decision. A series of his hits through the late 2000s and this decade led him to become one of the most recognizable names in music. Since becoming wealthy and famous, the artist has turned his attention to helping the Latino community where he was raised in Miami by closing the poverty gap through educational initiatives. He helped start a charter school in Little Havana called Sports Leadership and Management, the acronym is SLAM, and it's now starting to pop up in Las Vegas, Atlanta, and other cities around the country, and he boasts a 96% graduation rate. During Hurricane Maria, he chartered a plane to fly Puerto Rican cancer patients to Miami for treatment. He is donating all of his profits from his latest song to the nonprofits Feeding America and the Anthony Robbins Foundation. In addition, he's active with the Nicholas Children's Hospital and Imaginate Foundation, two Miami-based charities. He also has a podcast where he interviews people that have taken their own lives from a negative to a positive. His last guest, billionaire Bernie Marcus.
Imagine.
Ironically.
Yep.
In 2021, this artist also purchased part of a NASCAR team, a team that includes driver Daniel Suarez, the only Mexican NASCAR driver. So he's trying to bring diversity to a sport that is probably the least diverse sport in America. Having amassed a fortune somewhere in the $100 million range by his early 40s, Armando Christian Perez, a.k.a. Mr. 305, a.k.a. Mr. Worldwide, is commonly known by the stage name of Pitbull. Having been born into poverty to parents who had fled the communist regime in Cuba, Pitbull is fiercely pro-American and now dedicates much of his life to teaching kids how to realize the American dream. Huh. Pretty cool story, huh?
I didn't even know who he was. I'm not in that lane of music until I saw him interviewed about... Alan's doing his best Pitbull imitation.
Yeah.
Motel Holiday Inn.
I saw him interviewed about probably 2 years ago, and it wasn't something I would normally watch, but there's something quite engaging about this guy.
Yeah, and he speaks in a lot of – he uses a lot of phrases over and over, but when you listen to him, they're all very positive, motivating things, and it's really I think it appeals to a broad segment of the population, and his message is so good that even though he is a little bit different than your normal sort of
if you look at him, you're certainly not going to believe that this guy is a motivator that your kids ought to pay attention to.
He's just a very unconventional role model, but he's really, really good. I've developed a great respect for him.
Yeah, I agree. Seemed like a real good guy. Well, there's not time to get into a whole bunch of stuff, but I want to talk a little bit more. This thing that's going on in the Senate right now, they've been talking about for 24 hours, and you know darn well it's going to pass. There were a couple of things that came out of it, like the bridge to Canada for Schumer and Pelosi's tunnel in San Francisco. Those things are not able to be done this way, so they'll go after them separately or just allocate them later without telling anybody. But there are things in there that are just so ridiculous, and they're not good for you, and they're not good for me. One of the little things that mostly go unnoticed, and I will tell you next week whether or not all these things pass, because some things are being changed as we speak before it gets signed. Then it's got to go back to the House for reconciliation. But suffice it to say, most of it will happen. one of the things, well, probably the primary thing that the liberals want to do is to increase your taxes. Some will tell you that they're just going to do it. Some won't. Right now, I am very concerned that the Trump tax cuts, 2017 tax cuts, are going to expire in 2026. I wasn't worried about that before because I knew with a Republican in the White House that that would never happen. Well, we don't have that anymore. Not only that, we don't have either House of Congress right now. So that's got hopefully some time to change. Otherwise, they're going to go out at 2026, which will raise taxes on everyone. But this one has a little insidious thing out there. The amount you can contribute to your deductible long-term pension profit sharing IRA retirement plan accounts is indexed for inflation. And under this proposal, in 2031, the indexing would stop and they'd be frozen indefinitely. What does that do? It decreases your ability to keep up with inflation for your own retirement and doing it as we do now on a pre-tax basis. This is an insidious little thing that would have been done tomorrow, except they have this little stupid thing that I complain about called the Byrd Rule, which makes it put off till later. More about it next week. Hope to see you then. This is the Ben Lee Financial Hour.